Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, and welcome to Everything is Fine, a podcast for women over 40. I'm Jen Romolini.
And I'm Kim France.
Today, we're going to do something a little bit different. Kim and I both had birthdays in the last couple of weeks. And so we've decided that we're going to have an episode kind of checking in about how we're feeling about getting older.
Yep.
Right, Kim?
Yes, that's right, Jen.
But first, you had something that's going on with you today that you were going to tell me about that you were saving up.
I was saving up, and really, it's pathetic that I was saving it up because it's not that big. But you know how, like, sometimes you have a conflict with a stranger and it's the first thing that happens in your day and it kind of colors your whole day?
Yes, I can have that happen to me for a whole week, but yes.
I was walking the dog this morning. I was almost done with my walk, and this guy in a Jeep totally runs a stop sign. He totally runs a stop sign. And then pulls up in front of a building about a half a block away, which I watch him do. A woman gets out of the car, and then I go, and he's waiting for her. So I go up to him and I knock on his window, and he barely rolls it down. And I said, "Stop at a fucking stop sign, dude." And he's like, "Yeah, whatever." And so I banged on his car window, and he's like, "Don't you touch my car." And oh, I was like, "I'll touch your fucking car." But it was just like the kind of ugly conflict that just colors your whole day. Like, but also sort of gets your like adrenaline going. So in a way, it's kind of good.
Yes. I had that situation happen to me a few weeks ago. There was a woman crossing the street and I had stopped for her, but she didn't actually cross. She had a stroller, a cup of coffee, and was talking on her phone. And she was like one of those, nothing wrong with these women, but she had a very expensive like nap dress on, you know, those nap dresses that make you look like, you know, like a lady of the canyon. And like everything was like her. She had like a $2,000 stroller, mm-hmm. and she was totally distracted. And so I was waiting for her to go or not go. And eventually I started going, like moving my car very slowly. At the same time, she decided to then cross the street and I stopped immediately and she banged my car.
Oh,
and I was
wow.
like, you have a baby and need to pay attention to what you're doing. And she told me, fuck you. And I said, fuck you right back. And yes, it made me feel terrible for the whole day, but also weirdly exhilarated.
Yes. And I was talking to our producer, Natalie, about how I never know, like, I always go for it. Like something happens. I was telling her about overhearing somebody say something anti-Semitic and like, I go for it. You press that button, I go for it. I'm totally going after you. And I wonder if that's the correct response.
Well, I think that being emotionally impulsive, which I believe that both of us are,
yes.
is sometimes great and sometimes not. I've been watching Ted Lasso finally. I'm 100 years late to this. Mm-hmm. And I've been watching this very nice man move through the world. And the thing is about Ted Lasso is he's not dumb. Like, it's, I feel like the easy play for that, like so many other like writers would have made, written him as a dumb character, and he's not dumb. He's just really kind.
Mm-hmm.
And that is so unusual to just see a kind person.
Yep.
And I wanted to, I wish that with the lady in the $400 nap dress, I wish that what I had felt was, oh, she must be having a really hard time to bang my car like this. I wish my instinct was immediate compassion, but I'm not there yet.
Sometimes when somebody really pisses me off, I think maybe they're taking care of a sick parent. Maybe they just lost their job. I'll try to run through all the reasons I can to maybe have empathy for them.
Right. No, I know. And me too, but it doesn't work. And it doesn't work all the time. It's just like when you're in a really sad mood and you're feeling bad about yourself. And it's like, well, at least I have two legs. And it just doesn't work, because in that moment, you're feeling a different feeling. And you kind of need to acknowledge that first before you can move on to like the sort of better angels or whatever they say.
Fair enough.
I have been thinking this week a lot about my style. Because yeah. I just turned 48 and I see sort of a dangerous pattern occurring. You know how you see older women and they've just like sort of stopped at a certain point? Like they found a look, and like you see this often, it's like, or at least when I was younger, you'd see women who were just trapped in the 70s, like 70s, you know, eyeshadow and all of the clothes, and like it looked like they bought their whole wardrobe then, and they just sort of became trapped. It's like a time capsule. Well, I have been thinking that maybe I'm just going to stop here. I have a pretty good like aging ceramicist early 80s preschool teacher look going, and maybe this is it for me. Like I have pants that fit. I'm wearing like a, you know, a sort of baggy-ish top with like a collared shirt popped underneath, and I have it really down, and I'm wearing it with like sneakers, which is also a new thing, and I feel like kind of like, yeah, like Garanimals. And I don't know how I landed here. It's like a combination of getting older and the pandemic, but I'm very comfortable, and it might be it. I'm like, will I ever try a new look again?
You know what? I totally get that. I totally get that, because I've been thinking about it a lot too, because I have found increasingly that I dress like a boy. And I...
Like a little boy or an older boy?
Not like a little boy. I dress in button down shirts and chinos and jeans. Like that's okay. What I wear. That's the, my ex-boyfriend Seth said I dressed like a very glamorous lesbian.
Okay. Okay.
Which I'll take.
I like that.
I'll take it.
Yeah. Not you
know.
Bad.
But I do wonder sometimes like on dates, you know, like, do I really want to show up in like a button down and sneakers? Lately I have. You know, so I get it. And I also think we all get a little bit stuck in the era that we first developed our sense of style.
What is that for you?
I think it is the 90s.
I think that my first style icon was my mother in the 70s. And I think that I have really, and it's like very specific 70s. It's like late 70s, early 80s, actually. It's like Meryl Streep and Kramer versus Kramer. Mm-hmm. It's a very, very specific look. And I remember like movies from that time. There's this amazing Marsha Mason movie. Is that her name? Marsha?
Yep.
Did I make that name?
You did not.
Marsha Mason. Only When I Laugh, which was my favorite childhood film, which is a movie about an alcoholic mother and like her teenage daughter, like scrapping it out in New York City. She's a single mom, and her style in that movie is impeccable. And I still want everything she's wearing. So I do think I arrested kind of there, but this is something new because this is about comfort.
Yeah.
And I'm curious about how far it's going to go, you know?
Well, you know, it depends. My friend Andrea has a theory that after this pandemic is over, people are going to go in one of two directions. Either they're going to go nuts with their clothes and dress way up for everything, or they're going to have taken a cue from the past year and realize that being comfortable is a lot better.
Do you feel worried about seeing people out in the world? Like, do you, how do you feel? Like, when you think about the first party you go to when this is all over, how does that make you feel?
I'm excited. I want to go to a party. Like, that makes me excited. Does it make you excited?
It makes me feel like I want to throw up and die.
Why? Why?
I can't imagine being in a room of people and how overwhelming that would be. And I equally can't imagine sort of feeling or being consumed by other people in a way, in that way that happens in a party where you're all looking at each other and you're looking around and you're talking and you're engaging in a conversation and then you're moving to the next conversation and, you know, you're looking people up and down because that's just what you're doing. It's not a judgment thing, but it is a consumption, right? And I can't imagine how exposed I'll feel in those situations.
I get that. But Romolini, I just thought of the most hilarious thing you said once. And it was at a party. There's a reason I'm bringing this up. We were both complaining about how we were fat. This is when we were at Lucky and we were both decidedly not fat, but we were going on about how we were fat.
We were fat for women's magazines, though. I will say that. And it doesn't matter. And it's disgusting. And that was a terrible time. But for women's magazines where everyone was a size 0 or 2 and I was a size 8. I was big for that world just because of how that world was.
Well, that is absolutely true. And that is absolutely true. And we went to this domino party and you looked around and you came running back to me and you were like, Kim, we're not fat. Look at these people. We're medium. We're medium.
Look, I think that I am so happy that I hope that women don't talk about their bodies the way our generation of women talked about our bodies.
Yeah.
I feel like there was so much of my life wasted thinking about my body's imperfections and if it grew a certain size. And, you know, I was also men that I dated who were horrible. And I remember I had a boyfriend who told me that if I gained 5 pounds, he found me less attractive. And so he really needed me to stay skinny. And I didn't dump him. I stayed with him for like 2 years and stayed skinny.
Yikes.
So anyway, so yes, I really regret so much of that time. And I don't really think about my weight anymore. Only actually, I was telling you this yesterday, that I don't want to be too thin as I get older. I want to actually have some heft on my body because it makes me feel stronger.
Well, you know, and there's also the Catherine Deneuve quote, it's that at a certain point you choose your face or your ass.
Yeah, and there's that, but also like my feeling is now, and also because I'm raising a daughter, my feeling is that what I tell her is we don't talk about other people's bodies.
Right.
We don't talk about other people's bodies, and we don't talk about our bodies in negative ways.
That's so fantastic.
Well, that is the thing I have never, because I grew up around a mom who was constantly dieting.
Me too.
I don't know about you.
Me
Mine
too.
Was, I mean, cabbage soup diet. It was Ensure. I mean, I don't even know what the fuck she was on. Not Ensure. There was like another thing that you took that was like a shake. And put up pictures of fit
yes.
women that she'd rip out of magazines.
I was about,
and she put them on the refrigerator.
I was about to say the same exact thing to you that I think it was, and I adore my mother and I'm not holding it against her, but I think it was deeply damaging that all, like on her bedroom mirror and on the refrigerator were photographs of like skinny women in bikinis.
Yeah, it's fucking awful. Like inspo, it's awful. And I also heard her like talk about herself in really negative ways. You know, I heard her call herself a fat pig, and my mom is skinny and tall, and like she really always thought she was fat, and if she gained 5 pounds, it was like a disaster. You know, I was bulimic in high school, and then I started really just smoking cigarettes. And I think that cigarettes, which, you know, I loved and we've talked about, I think that they kept me really thin.
Yeah.
And so I didn't really have to think about it for a long time.
Yeah.
But back to the mom thing.
Back to moms. I was thinking about how my mom was always on a diet like your mom and always weighing foods on a little Weight Watchers scale and everything else.
Oh.
And putting those pictures up and talking about herself like she was fat. And I thought she was fat. Like growing up, I thought she was fat. I look at photos now, it's like there was nothing wrong with my mother's body. She had a perfectly beautiful body. But because of the way she acted, I thought she was fat.
Well, also, what the fuck would be wrong if she was fat?
Exactly.
Like that's where I've gotten to like now. Like there's nothing wrong with any of this. I can't believe how manipulated I was into thinking that anybody's body was wrong.
Right.
I'm so sad about it.
I mean, I've gained weight this over the course of the last year. I've lost some of it. I was, you know, pretty heavy over the summer, and it was, you know, I'm glad I've lost the bit of, you know, some weight since then, but it's trying to be at peace with that, that this is just part of what my body is going through right now. It's changing is really challenging, but I'm trying, you know, I'm trying. And I, you know, to look in the mirror and get used to seeing something different in my reflection.
Right. And yeah, and I'm glad to hear that, because we should be able to take up more space. The entire idea that we should be thin and smaller and take up less space is the patriarchy at work. Let's fucking face it. Yeah. Right. And I have really internalized that messaging because I was absolutely not going to pass on that dysfunction to another generation.
Right.
I was absolutely not. And I remember when my daughter was 7, she had gained a little weight. And I now understand this is like a pre-puberty body. They start to put on some weight and then they lose. Well, it doesn't even matter. And the pediatrician said to me, you know, I don't know. She's going to go into puberty earlier if you let her keep gaining weight. The pediatrician recommended to me, and this is not that long ago, that I put my 7-year-old daughter on a diet.
Yikes.
And I was, and it was all about healthy eating, and it was framed in this very, you know, oh, well, she needs to be, this is about health, and she can't, you know, her BMI, or is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Her BMI is a little high. And I didn't put her on a diet. I knew better than that. But I did start talking to her about like, oh, we should exercise more. And because her brain was not broken, she said to me, that makes me feel bad when you say things like that. That makes me feel like you think I'm not okay. And we wound up having conversations about it. And I've since apologized quite a bit. Like, I'm sorry that I was like talking to you about getting in shape. Like I didn't need to be doing that. And that was my own like messaging that I had my whole life. Right. So, I mean, we can transform these things, but it's not easy. And it really takes being hyper aware of how you talk to yourself, how you think about other people, how you talk to yourself, not comparing your body to other bodies, all of it. And it's really like a deprogramming, I feel like.
Yeah. And I think the comparing is so key. Women do so much of that. And you just can't. Bodies are just different.
Right. Imagine how liberated you would have been if you just understood that when you were a kid. Like, if you had none of that. Imagine how differently you would have moved the world if you never had the thought, my body is bad, my weight is incorrect. Like, imagine how much time you wasted thinking about it.
Oh my God. And the way that dieting, once you start dieting, you become obsessed with food in such an unhealthy way. And I think about how much time I spent thinking about how many fucking carrots I was eating.
Oh my God. Or almonds.
Yes.
The big almond, when there was the push to eat almonds, and it was like dry, raw, disgusting almonds, it tasted like wood. I ate so many almonds at one point.
You know, the other thing I find is that as my body has changed, you know, I've, you know, it's not like I'm sleeping with men all the time, but I sleep with men occasionally. And it's been really nice to see that by and large, they're pretty accepting of like what my body is, the men I've been with recently. you know, in the past few years. They're not the ones who have the problem.
No, but also imagine if they fucking did. Like, seriously, that's the problem is us even caring if they do.
Yeah.
You know, that's the problem. Because think about all the ways, like the bodies on men that we accept.
No shit.
I mean, really.
I think that every time I see a man with a big fat stomach walking down the street with his shirt off, you know, yeah. It's just like, where does that self-love come from and how do I get some of it?
Well, the freedom with which they've been allowed to move through the world versus the way we've been allowed to move through the world and the ways that we've been complicit in minimizing ourselves. And yeah, we've been complicit in our own misery for sure.
Yep.
If I really think about my life, it's one of my biggest regrets is how much I obsessed over my body.
Yep, I agree.
And now a word from our sponsors.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And we're back. The other thing I've been thinking about, besides my ceramicist look, my ceramicist outfit, I've been reading, I don't know, did you read this thread about ageism in the workplace? Have you been reading any of this information?
No.
Well, there's a woman, I'm forgetting her name. There's a writer who wrote a whole Twitter thread this week about how she applied for a job at the Washington Post. And she is a writer who worked for years at the New Yorker. And I forget where else she worked, another place. And she applied for a job at the Washington Post and they wrote her back an email that is the most condescending email in the world. You know, I should just pull it up. It was basically like, you know, just keep on writing. We're looking for somebody who has more experience than you do. Just hope you keep writing. It's like the worst.
And she was a New Yorker writer?
She was a New Yorker writer. So yeah, it's Emily Nunn. She was 57 years old. She was saying that there's real ageism happening, but it's actually a taboo to talk about ageism in the workplace. And she was talking about how she applied. She's published a book that was really popular, and she took a break from staff writing and she applied for a job at the Washington Post in the style section. And it seemed like a good fit because it's what she'd covered. And they wrote her back an email that said, "Thanks for applying for the open position in style. Unfortunately, we're looking for people who have a broader range of experience and a significant number of years at a well-known publication." And then they wrote, "Keep writing." She's 57 years old and been a writer for decades. "Keep writing. Good luck with your career."
Oh my God. She just got like, she unbelievable.
And then she'd worked for over a decade at The New Yorker and 7 years at the Chicago Tribune. She was talking about how much she's experiencing ageism, how she cannot find a job anywhere. Like, she started her own newsletter, but she can't get a job on staff anywhere. Now, look, I know a lot of people can't get a job on staff anywhere. It's a really tough time.
As a writer, especially, yeah.
As a writer, especially, and it's a really tough time in media. But a woman who has that much experience should be considered for a role and shouldn't be told that she has a lack of experience, which is why she's disqualified. You know, I do think that there is real ageism, and it's something I don't want to accept, but it's something that I'm starting to see more and more, particularly as I work on projects and the heads of the projects are all like 15 and 20 years younger than I am.
Yeah.
Which starts to get really intense. And then you start to think to yourself, well, what do I do? Is this over? Do I, you know, what happens to me next? And I don't know. And I don't know about you, but I have a lot of aspirations about what I still want to do creatively. And I hate thinking that the entry points are going to be closed.
Yep, I get it. And I have not looked for a job in 11 years. I figured out a way to support myself, and that works for me. But I also think I haven't looked for a job for 11 years because I knew what to expect. I knew, like, friends of mine who've applied for jobs that they'll hear they didn't get it because they're not quote unquote digital natives, which is code for being old. And I was a print editor, so I'm a little bit of a dinosaur. And I would say that I feel pretty bad about that. I feel like I'm very grateful that I support myself with something that I built myself. But I would like to think I'd still be relevant in a workplace. And I don't know that I feel that way.
Well, I mean, it's changed so much, particularly for us, right? The industry that we went into does not exist in the same way anymore.
And it barely exists.
The industry, it barely exists at all. The industry that replaced it, I have found, for the most part, my experience with it, and particularly the years I was doing it, I found was really not satisfying. I found digital media to be just sort of a numbers game and not about quantity, not about quality. And also, we were talking about this earlier in the week, when you're a creative person in business, and you really get a peek behind the curtain at how the sausage is made and the decisions you have to make and the ways you have to bend your integrity to keep the business going, it just leaves a bad taste in your mouth. I feel like I felt so sad working so often, managing people, managing up, having to fire people, the hard business decisions, they really affected me emotionally.
Yeah, me too.
So, and as business became more cutthroat, it became increasingly difficult to think about the work and focus on the creative work. The focus had to be more on all the sort of ancillary things. You were no longer, it wasn't like Condé Nast anymore, where there was a business side and there was like a creative side, and the two didn't have to mix that much. once you got into digital and it was so cutthroat, everybody was sort of, you had to do all of the different jobs. And I wasn't, I could do them, but I didn't like it.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't like the way that business concerns intruded on my creativity at Lucky, certainly. I don't have anything else to say on that.
I don't know. We don't have to keep talking about this. We can move on to something else.
Well, I want us to leave this work discussion on a happy note, because I feel like we're being very discouraging.
We are being very discouraging. Maybe we'll cut this segment. I don't know.
I mean, you've said it to me, Romolina. You said that the person you were talking to said to you, I've told you a million times, you've got to build something yourself. I realize not everybody's in a position to do that. But if you are, I think that is the solution if you're past a certain age.
I think that the solution is, if there is a solution, is to not fuck around with work you don't care about, to find the thing that you truly want to do and keep pushing on that. Because eventually, it might not be easy, but eventually you will find a door in.
Yeah.
If there is any solve here, it's getting right about what you want, what you feel passionate about, what you feel like you are good at, and mm-hmm. kind of running at that with the energy you have.
Right. Yep. That sounds good. That's encouraging enough.
Is that encouraging enough?
Yes. I like that.
What else do you want to talk about? What else are you thinking about in this year of 1 year older?
I feel like this is the year I officially went into menopause, and I feel okay about that. I was one of those weird people who liked getting her period. So not having that in my life anymore has been kind of a real loss. Like knowing that my body was capable of doing this thing every month is something that I was attached to. But now I'm seeing the advantages.
Tell me about the advantages. What are they?
Well, it's cool. It's actually kind of, you know, it mood wise, I think I'm more stable. I'm lucky. I don't think I've had much depression as part of menopause. I feel lighter in a way.
Yeah.
I feel like I shed a skin. You know, I'm not entirely comfortable with the skin I'm in now. I can't say that I am at 1000% peace with being menopausal, you know, but I'm seeing that I'm still a sexual person. I'm still somebody who, you know, has energy and can accomplish things. I think as much as I think I'm not relevant in a workplace, I still think I'm a relevant human being, and I wouldn't go back. I wouldn't go back.
That's really interesting. And it's really, I like hearing it because it gives me a lot of hope. I feel very much at 48, I feel very much in the middle of two different worlds. And I feel actually what I am is, you know, when you see people in a movie get sucked out of a plane and yes. There's like, you know, before they actually get sucked out, they're holding on to the plane, you know?
Yes. Like,
I feel that I'm gripping on to the plane. that's my sensation.
Yep, I get it. I get it. But I think that is so stressful.
It's totally stressful.
Nothing good can come from that. I mean, I feel like, I mean, you're the person who said to me that you're beginning to find older faces more beautiful.
And that's true.
So I think that then you just have to make your own older face beautiful too.
Yes, but all of this is a transition and all of it is a process. And I think that once I let go, a thing that I've been thinking about a lot is surrender. I think that once I let go and I stop gripping the plane, and obviously in this weird metaphor I've created here, the plane is my youth. And I think that once I let go of the plane and let myself sort of like float out, I'm going to be okay.
But well, that's I'm what still, I was trying to say.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
I mean, I feel like that's what I was trying to say.
My body's in the middle. It's all in the middle. And I think that it's like, I think that it's just the transition. I mean, it's hard physically too, because I'm also having a lot of very intense ups and downs, mood wise, physically, heat wise, like all of it. I'm still getting my period. Sometimes I get it like twice or three times a month. Sometimes I don't get it for 2 months. It feels like my body is glitching. And so the whole thing is physically and emotionally a transition. And eventually, yeah, I'll probably let go totally and be like, oh, cool. Not let go, but I'll be like, oh, cool. All right. I'm just like, I'm a cool lady post perimenopause. This is fine. But I think that this is, it's first off, it's fucking, we've talked about this before. I think we have. It's unexpected. Nobody prepped me for how weird this was going to be physically and emotionally. I had no idea that what perimenopause was going to do to me. I'd only heard about like, I'd only seen like those terrible Hallmark cards where the lady also looks like she's 30 years older than I am. Like, and the ladies that you see having hot flashes, you're like, wait, that's an old lady. And you're like, I'm not an old lady. So it's complicated because it's complicated culturally. And there's a lot of like shame around it too, you know? And it's like, oh, all you think of is like this dried up barren womb, or like, what's her name? Is her name Roxanne? Who's the Hallmark lady? Who's just Maxine. Who's just like, it was just like, here I am. It's so hot in here. I'm on fire. You know, it's like gross. And picturing yourself as that thing doesn't work, but knowing that something's changing is weird. So anyway, I am heartened to hear that the other side of this passage.
Well, you know what? One of the things that makes it challenging for people like me and you, Romolini, is that we're kind of like, I don't know if you're going to agree with this, but we've been interested in youth culture in our lives. And
yeah, we're fucking immature. We're immature.
Okay. That's what I'm trying to say. We're immature.
Yes. Just say it out loud. We're fucking immature. Yes. And frivolous. That's who I am. Yes.
Like, but we're still a little stuck in thinking that we're 17. You know, like I still sort of feel like a 17-year-old fuck up. So how can I also
I feel like a 25 to, I think I'm forever like 31.
Huh. Well, my friend Will has a theory that we all have an age when we're the most ourselves.
I think that's true. I think that's true.
And that's when yours would be? That would be your age?
I think it would be 31. I mean, and not like whatever, but like I was a young 31, but I feel like I feel like I was the most, and 31 was also significant. 31 was when I started dating my husband. 31, I started working at Lucky. 31 was a significant year for me. And I think I did feel most like myself. But then again, the shit I was interested in, mainly drinking, is not what I'm interested in anymore. So right. It doesn't totally work.
Yeah.
I think I just don't want to die. I mean, I don't know. Where's this headed? Like, I think the reason I'm holding on to the plane is because I'm like, I'm not interested in death.
Yeah, no, it's headed ultimately, it's headed nowhere good, but that's not for a while. It is true. And it is a, like when we interviewed Christina Kelly and asked her how she felt about being middle-aged, she said she doesn't feel like she can qualify as middle-aged anymore because she's 60. And that flips me out because I'm 3 years from that. And I must continue to be middle-aged. Like that's already enough of an insult. Don't make me be elderly yet. But, or when we were talking
God.
To.
Oh God. But it's also like the things that are happening physically. Like I told you, like I started having like hip clicks, like my hip just like pops and clicks. And I'm like, where does this go? And I catastrophize because that's who I am. And I'm like, well, where does this like clicking hip go? What do I, am I, when am I going to need a new hip?
I know.
Jump you. Everything I think of is gross. The other day I was like, I had to pee a lot one day, and it was because I was drinking a lot of water. But I was like, am I going to need a catheter? Just get into these.
You can't do that. You can't do that. Don't you know?
These dark zones.
You can't do that because, as my mother always says, if that happens, there will be time enough to be bummed out about it. Don't bum yourself out about it in advance.
I know. Worry, what is it? Worry does nothing for tomorrow, but only takes strength from today. Like some bullshit. I know I shouldn't be like this, but I'm neurotic.
I get it.
And it turns out being neurotic does not fit with aging. Not great.
No, it doesn't. And undignified things happen when you age. I mean, I had something happen to me, which I'm not going to share because it's just too much. But it was a really gross bodily thing that happened.
Okay.
And I was out. I was with my mom at my family's house in Long Island. And I was like, Mom, X just happened to me. Does that happen? And she's like, oh, yeah, that happens. Okay, should I say what it was?
Just say it.
This is so I involuntarily shat.
Okay. All right.
That was a lot. I know. I'm just telling you, just a tiny little bit. And it wasn't a shart. It wasn't a shart.
Okay.
It was just like
It was a loss of control.
It just came out. Just a little bit just came out.
I feel like this happens to men all the time. I think that's why their fucking pants, their underpants are always so dirty. I think they're disgusting. I think that yes. But I think that yes, well, this is why I'm holding on to the plane. I don't want any of this literal shit.
I know, but the worst thing is what happens when you're holding on to the plane and all the shit is happening anyway?
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing, because also the stress that I'm causing my body, I think, is making me feel worse, to be honest, because I'm so uptight. I'm like, oh my God. Like, I've been hearing a lot about pelvic floors and I'm like, oh fuck.
Oh, so I totally, I dropped the ball on the pelvic floor. That's a place I haven't even gone.
What does that mean? Did you get the jade egg? What the fuck are we supposed to do here?
I don't want to fucking do Kegels. I know women with Kegels have magic vaginas. I know the women who do Kegels have magic vaginas and can do all sorts of things, and that it's better for you as you get older. But I just hate the feeling of Kegels.
I do Kegels constantly. I'm never not Kegling.
Well, now I know you have a magic vagina.
I don't know if I have a magic vagina. I might have over-cabled. Okay, well, we did that. Thanks for listening to Everything Is Fine. I'm Jem Romolini.
And I'm Kim France.
Our producer is the wonderful Natalie Rivera. If you like the show, be sure to rate it and review it on all platforms. You can follow the show's Instagram at EIF Podcast. Email us at everythingisfinethepodcast@gmail.com. And you can find Kim on her blog, girlsofacertainage.com. And also, this is new, we have a new Patreon, which is patreon.com/everythingisfine.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.